People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Look out, Jake Dumbledore, what's happened?
He's back. He's back.
You don't know.
I don't know. What?
You should probably just meander back there. Take a look. See if he's back.
Dare I?
You know what? I'm going to. For old time's sake.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here, back with you once again after a very long hiatus for a recap of the Giants' Week 1 game against Pittsburgh Steelers. Before we get into the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, and follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're on iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. No sponsors this week, although I do have one exciting one in the mix, pandemic-related, naturally enough. Pretty cool product. Working on getting a free sample right now just to check it out, and hopefully in the coming weeks I'll be able to show you guys what it is. It's pretty cool. But until then, let's jump right into it. Weiss, how are you?
Ethan? I am so happy football is back for a while.
Me too.
It wasn't going to be football. I held out hope.
Yes.
So we had our first week, and kudos to the NFL, the NFLPA, the players, the coaches, really everyone, for getting through training camp without any hiccups. Obviously, the real test starts now with actual games and people traveling, but so far, it seems like their plan is working, and that is surprising.
Yes, I think that's got to be one of the bigger takeaways of the offseason, is absolutely that they did a bang-up job with the testing. Yes. And, I mean, we know how the NFL can screw things up. And, I mean, listen, we spoke about it a few weeks ago. Honestly, it could have been a few months ago at this point. Who knows? But I don't think either of us was particularly optimistic about the season going off without a hitch. And yet here we are, week one, no positive COVID tests. And on top of that, I don't know about you, but watching the slate of games on Sunday, and honestly, up until the second Monday night game, the quality of play shocked me. I thought we were going to see some disgusting football, a lot of mental mistakes, maybe a higher than usual number of injuries, but quality of play was pretty good, you know, especially from like a fantasy and gambling perspective where the Giants aren't playing Monday. So Sunday, I'm parked on my couch, you know, I'm flipping between the Islanders and all the different football games and Red Zone. The quality of play was pretty good.
Yes, it was. And I think for me, I was telling somebody who I was watching the game with, I said, it's almost like the season is a continuation of last year. The teams that were really good last year were still really good this year. Like, there were no, like, major upsets I can think of. I mean, you saw Baltimore take care of business. You saw Kansas City take care of business.
Yeah. I guess maybe Washington being the only major upset that I can think of.
Right, that's
the
only one that really was an upset. But everything else, like, I think, like, everyone said Atlanta was going to beat Seattle. Well, Seattle took care of business, and it was also like the same things that, you know, were issues for teams last year. Those same issues were continued into this year. So, yeah, the level of play was really good. I really enjoyed it. The fans not being there, I really noticed it in the New Orleans game. I felt like if there were fans in there, it would just, I mean, that dome is always, like, insane. And, yeah,
rocking.
We'll probably notice it Seattle, too. I know they play New England on Sunday night. We'll definitely notice no fans being there, too. I think the league has to do better with the artificial fan noise. They got to, and the network's got to do it better, too, because it's a little bit too, it doesn't sound too real. And I know that.
See, I'll disagree with you there a little bit. I thought they did a pretty good job, and correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like I read something a few days ago about how you know, they mandated that the pumped in crowd noise was comparable to if, you know, like the average of the past home games with actual fans, so that they tried to make it as realistic as possible. I will agree with you that there were a few points in a number of the games that I was watching where it felt like, you know, whoever was running the crowd noise maybe pressed the wrong button, or, you know, people were cheering when the home team, you know, fucked up, but it should have been, you know, dead silent, whatever it was. But they'll fine-tune it. I didn't think it was too
difficult. Well, I think, like, if you're a team that has – like, the Saints and the – I don't know. What's a team that – like the Saints and the Redskins,
Kansas City.
Yeah, like the Saints, Kansas City, Seattle. I don't feel like they should have the same amount of crowd noise as the Redskins and like the Bengals. You know what I mean? Like I feel like those teams like deserve more. Like you got to make it more real. You know, like if you're going to Seattle, obviously there's no fans, but you got to at least make it sound like Seattle. You know, like just like the fact that they're letting fans in into certain stadiums across the country. And people are like, oh, that's a competitive advantage. Well, I think you can sort of tailor that to fan noise. Like, obviously, Seattle, New Orleans, Kansas City, these are stadiums that are, you know, rocking. Even Buffalo, I'll throw in there. Like, they're loud stadiums. And I think that those teams, because it's obvious, those teams have a greater home field advantage than other teams do. And I think that they should balance it out there where it's like those teams get – you know, those teams will allow to pump more crowd noise in there than other teams.
Yeah, and I think that's their goal. And I think that's the point that I was trying to make. I could have sworn that I read somewhere that they were trying to make it as realistic as possible for each different home team. But we'll see. But yeah, overall, I thought the quality of play was pretty good and excited, really excited that football's back. We need this. The country needs this. I'm just hoping
we can get through the season with any big outbreaks or anything like that. And I was so surprised. We talked about it. I said that I think there's going to be if there's going to be a sort of delay with the season, it's going to come with the NFL and the NFLPA not agreeing on a lot of things. But I'm so happy that it wasn't an MLB situation where like things dragged out and there was, you know, the safety, you know, issues, and then where they couldn't agree on, you know, protocols, and then there was going to be the financial thing. But it seems like everything was smooth, and it seems like the players are happy that they can play, and the owners are happy, and it's nice. I just hope we can continue it over the course of the remainder of the season.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. All right, let's jump into the Giants-Steelers week one. We have a lot to discuss. Let's organize it by side of the ball. So let's start on the offensive side of the ball. One topic I'd like to cover right out of the gates, and it's something that we noticed right out of the gates for yesterday's game, the play of Evan Engram.
Yeah.
Bad. Actually, very bad. With Engram, it's gotten to the point where I think we can all agree that this guy is just sort of on his last hurrah with the Giants if he cannot prove to be a competent offensive weapon. And you look at what he did yesterday. And it's, I mean, I joke, but without getting injured, it's what he's done for the majority of his Giants career. His complete inability to block, and then he had a few crucial drops in the game. He got called for an offensive pass interference. It's the same thing since he was drafted at this point, which is everyone can see the potential, but for whatever reason, he just hasn't lived up to it. I'm of the opinion that at this point in his career, and it's weird because in my head I keep comparing this to an Eric Flowers situation, right? First round pick and has disappointed throughout his career as a Giant. And his biggest critique coming out, and it's something that both of us defended him against, was his inability to block. And it's not that he didn't try, it's just that he wasn't good at it. And I think we saw both a little of him being bad at it and him not trying last night. And you got to wonder, how is he going to be utilized in this offense moving forward? And I'll bring it back to the Eric Flowers situation where they brought him in to be the franchise left tackle. He flamed out. The Giants, for whatever reason, refused to try him at guard. And then he went elsewhere and caught on as, call it, a competent guard at the NFL level. I'm at the point where I have personally seen enough from Caden Smith to feel comfortable with him being the tight end one moving forward. You have nothing to lose. Why not try Engram as a pure receiver?
Well,
do you agree? Do you disagree? Like, I understand the concern, but if he can't block, he is an obvious liability in the run game. Just use him as a receiver. I mean, at this point, you're not going to have Golden Tate on the roster much longer. Slayton is breaking out to be your true wide receiver one. Shepard is one concussion away from retirement. Try the guy out as a slot receiver.
Well, I think the thing with Evan Engram is, you're right. I mean, we're all waiting for the hype. You know, everyone talks about Evan Engram, the hype. If he can stay healthy, I think you have to use him to his strengths. And his strengths, obviously, is not blocking. He's not an average tight end. He's not a guy that can block, you know, pass rushers and then also catch passes. I mean, he's a mismatch for linebackers, and he's too big for corners. That's who Evan Engram is. And I think what you need to do is you need to design plays, put him in positions where you can take advantage of his strengths. And I feel like yesterday he didn't play well. But if you were going in there with the expectation that Evan Engram is going to have a good blocking game, even though he dropped passes, that wasn't going to happen, because that's not who Evan Engram is. If he's dropping passes, then it doesn't matter where you line him up. You know, you can line him up at receiver, you can line him up anywhere. If he's dropping passes, then he's really, I don't want to say no use, but I mean, what else does he bring to the table? So he has to do a better job with his hands. Obviously, we talk about the health as the big thing, but you're right. I mean, he has dropped a lot of passes in his career. I'm not going to, you know, say I'm giving up on Engram, or I'm you know, we should take what we can and just trade him. Like, I don't think that's the way to go. I think you have to continue to work with him. This is a new coaching staff. One of the things that I like about Joe Judge is he seems like a coach that wants to take advantage of his player strengths instead of getting rid of them because of their weaknesses. And I think with Engram, you know, you just have to put him in position where he can take advantage of his strengths and not have his weaknesses cost you. And I think yesterday they didn't really do a good job of having him block cost them. And everyone knows that Evan Engram isn't a good blocker. But at the same time, he didn't help because he was dropping passes and the offensive pass interference. So I'm not going to write off Evan Engram after one game. I still believe he can be a capable, sort of like an offensive weapon. I think if you call him a tight end, then, you know, people automatically assume that he has to be able to block. But they have to put him in better positions, and he has to play better. So that's my take on Engram. I know people were very frustrated with him, and I was frustrated with him. But again, I can't just sit here.
And I think part of the frustration is with the preseason hype that we were all hearing out of camp. I mean, the offense was in love with him. That Garrett was going to use him as all over the place, and that Judge loved his athleticism. And you know, game one was a dud.
It was a dud, and it was a dud on both ends, because it just seemed like the Giants. You don't want to say he doesn't fit in this offense, because you don't want to judge it off one game, especially given the circumstances of, you know, how the offseason went and how no preseason. But he has to be better. And more showings like this, it will just, you know, I don't want to say it.
The noise is going to get louder, because the fan base is going to start to call for a trade for a mid-round pick.
And I don't think that's the right way to go after one game, to be saying we should just trade him. But like you said, the noise is only going to get louder if Engram continues to put up performances like this.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. All right. Next up on the offense, let's just talk about the running game as a whole.
I'll start. Okay, because it seems like every time we talk about the running game here, we're on Twitter or anywhere, right? I hate talking about this because I'm so over it. But every time we talk about the running game, the discussion always goes back to 2018. and I hate it.
Of course. Let me preface the conversation with something, and I get your point. Saquon Barkley averaged minus 0.67 yards before contact per attempt last night.
I mean, listen,
we can argue until the cows come home, and we have, whether or not Saquon was the right pick in 2018. And 2018 is probably something that I'm going to bring up later. But we know what Saquon can do. Yeah. Saquon is a bona fide star. He is one of the best running backs in the league. You cannot take that away from him. Right? Last night's running game issues were Jason Garrett and scheme. I'll loop those two together. As well as the Giants' complete inability to run block. And with that, I'll throw it back to you.
Right. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you go back to 2018 every time we talk about the Giants' run game. But here's the thing. I am not someone that says running backs don't matter, and I do believe that running backs have value, especially ones that are two-dimensional, like a Saquon, like a McCaffrey, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, guys like that. But I think the most important thing is when you're drafting a running back high, you have to know that you're running, that your offensive line is established or on the verge of being established. The Giants' offensive line has never been established, let alone even been on the verge of establishment. And I think if you're somebody that believed that the Giants' offensive line was going to be established, especially in 2018 or ever was on the verge, I think you're fooling yourself. I mean, if you look at it, they have a new left tackle who's a rookie. They were starting a guy, Nick Gates, who was playing his first game as a center. Will Hernandez was in his third year after coming off a really down year. We're still waiting for the flowers to blossom with them. Sorry to bring up flowers and offensive line in the same sentence. But my point is, it's not an established offensive line. There's still a lot of building that needs to go in there. Now, the hope is, given last year's class, you take a massive step forward in sort of fixing your offensive line. But it is not fixed yet. And so when you take a running back high and you don't have an established offensive line, you cannot maximize his value. And yesterday was a great example of that. Saquon Barkley is the New York Giants' best offensive player, and he is their best player on their team. We heard what was said. He is going to be the integral part of their offense, and he has to be. He's their best offensive player. But when you are unable to run block, it doesn't matter who the running back is. You will not be successful. You can say that stat one more time. He averaged how many yards before contact or after contact?
Negative 0.67.
He was getting hit every time he got the ball. Now, yes, sort of like I said with Ingram, they have to do a better job scheming, and they have to do a better job of, you know, being creative in how they run the ball. But here's the thing. In the end, if you don't have the talent, the coaching staff can only do so much, especially when you're going against a team like the Steelers.
That was my biggest takeaway from last night. That exact statement.
Exactly. So it goes back to when you're going against a team like the Steelers. Look, they're an experienced team. They're a very good defense. Although their interior, their defensive line is probably the weakest of their defense. But you can run on them. But the Giants were unable to do that. And it goes back to the talent on the offensive line is not all there. Or if you think it's there, the guys are not playing up to their potential or up to what you thought they would be.
I mean, it's crazy to think about because, you know, of the five starters last night, the only established long-term piece of that offensive line is Andrew Thomas. Because outside of Will Hernandez's rookie season, we haven't really seen, you know, we've seen a serviceable guard, don't get me wrong, but he hasn't lived up to that rookie season. Nick Gates was rough, and, you know, I don't want to bring this up because Leonard Williams had a great game, but there were two highly touted centers, one of them being Lloyd Cushenberry, who had a very good start last night for Denver that would have been available at pick 68 for the Giants.
I'm glad you saw that. He was really good. Yes. He did not look like a rookie.
He was great. We'll talk about that when we get to the defensive side of the ball. But then you have Zeitler, who didn't have a great game and is on the wrong side of 30 with a cap hit that doesn't justify his level of play anymore. And Cam Fleming, who hand up. I was excited about Cam Fleming. I don't know why. I had this vision in my head that, you know, he could be a pretty good one-year guy and maybe earn himself an extension or get re-signed after the season. But boy, was I wrong on Cam Fleming. And, you know, Matt Peart is on the bench. Hopefully he goes in to become the right tackle of the future. But right now, you know, we have a GM that took over, and 3 years later, we have one future piece that we know for sure in Andrew Thomas that can be a part of that offensive line moving forward. That's insanity.
And the Cam Fleming thing was that was troubling. His performance was very troubling because out of all the newcomers, given everyone on the roster, he's the one guy that has experience not just with Jason Garrett but with Joe Judge as well. Because he was with New England. But you're right. I mean, like I said, and I hate to keep going back to 2018 because I feel like it's such a tiring debate, and it's so worthless anymore. But to prove my point is, like, if you take a running back high, right, you have to have an established offensive line or else the return on the investment is not going to be there. And, okay, it's going to take you a year. This is year three of Saquon Barkley, and we still haven't gotten that return on investment where he is the catalyst of us winning games. And that's a problem, man, and it's not his fault. I mean, like I said, it's tough to run when nobody's blocking. I mean, there was a couple of plays I saw where it's like before he could even get the ball, there was two guys in the backfield. I mean, it was insane. And the hope, like I said, the hope is the offensive line more reps together. I feel like talent-wise, they are a lot better than years past. And Andrew Thomas, I thought, had an impressive debut. They will get better. The continuity will be there, and you don't want to overreact that one game. Like I said, they were going against a really good defensive front. But, man, like, we got to start seeing a return on the investment. And even like someone like you who says, like, you'll never get a return on that investment. If I were to tell you, give me a number, right? Like, this is what I need from Saquon for me to be like, okay, I can somewhat not agree with the pick, but almost say like, okay, this is, even when they took him, this is what my expectation was. He's not met those expectations. And a lot of that is because, like I said, you don't have an established offensive line and it's a problem. And his pass protection, if he plays like the way he played yesterday, given what we saw the first 2 years, it's almost like you can't put him on the field on third down. And that is bad.
So let's talk about the pass protection.
That is bad.
And it's like Ingram to a certain extent with the pass protection in the sense that he wasn't really good at it coming into the league. This is year three. We haven't seen much improvement out of him. And then even when he does block, He's going too low on guys. He's not taking the full brunt of the contact. And it's like you have a guy who can absolutely decimate a defense on third downs, either out of the slot, out of the backfield, on screens.
We saw that screenplay. And when he got the ball in his hands and there was space.
You knew.
It was like you knew this was going to be a big play. I mean, that's why
it's so frustrating.
He's a great player. Like, where nobody's disputing that, right? Saquon Barkley's a great player. But the problem is he needs an offensive line that can block. And when you don't have a line that can block, it's going to be tough for you to get the most out of him. And that's the situation they're in right now, is that their offensive line has not established themselves yet. They have a lot of moving pieces. And it's a problem. And if they don't get it fixed... I mean, this is year three.
And Jason Garrett did some decent things with his scheme yesterday, but the most frustrating by far was it. There were just so many times. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of the big Slayton plays, I think, was out of a three tight end set. But it was like there were plenty of times, and I think Bobby Skinner of Talking Giants has a breakdown on his Twitter Bobby and I actually are friends now. We have made up, so that's fun.
Bobby Skinner. That's a great name. Is that his name?
Great name.
Bobby Skinner.
No, that's his real name.
That's a great name.
Yeah. So he did a video breakdown of one of the three tight end sets. And he pointed out, and I, you know, part of this is probably on Jones, part of this is on Garrett to identify this, but they were running 8 versus 9 men stacked in the box. And when you have 8 men versus 9 stacked in the box, 1, you're outnumbered, 2, you're going to need your running back to make a play, and 3, you need all 8 of your blockers to play flawless.
Yes.
They got to spread the offense out a little bit more because that's where Saquon is dangerous, out in space. Get him one-on-one against anyone, and he will burn them 9 times out of 10. You cannot operate this offense as if you have the Cowboys' offensive line and Saquon is Zeke. They are different players. That was another thing that was frustrating to me last night.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great point that Bobby Skinner made. I like that point a lot. And that goes to what I was saying yesterday, too, is it becomes too predictable. You know, they know what's coming. And sort of my point with taking Saquon off the field on third down. First of all, that if you have to take Saquon off the field because of his pass blocking, that's a problem in itself. But what it does is not only does it take Saquon off the field on third down, but it makes you even more predictable, right? Because they know that if you put him to Deion Lewis, it's the ball's not going to be handed off to Deion Lewis. And you know that Deion Lewis is essentially going to be a blocker or a receiver. And to me, that's it's tough, man, because we know what Saquon can do, and it's frustrating that we're not able to see it because of the Giants' inability to build an offensive line to maximize his value. And in year 3, where you know, given what we've seen with running backs getting paid the last few months and ever since McCaffrey got paid, you know the big payday is coming for Barkley, but you got to get more though, you know.
Yeah.
You got to get more. I know he's a great player and he deserves to get his money, but from a fan perspective, I got to get more. I mean, I need to get more out of Barkley because I know there is more. It's not an Evan Ingram situation where it's all hype. You know Saquon is great, but you cannot get him the ball. That's a problem.
Yep. All right. Moving on from the negative, let's talk some positive. Dan Jones, outside of that brutal red zone turnover, yes, looked very good.
Can I say something about that? Because this is why I hate Twitter so much, right? Because you're it's an emotional game, and you're frustrated at the pick, and then you go back and you see it. And I'm like, okay, I can see he was trying to throw it. It looks like he was trying to throw it in the back of the end zone.
And you pointed that out, and going back to look at it, I agree with you. I think he was trying to throw it out the back of the end zone.
When I put it out, automatically people assumed that I'm making an excuse, like it's not a bad play. No, it was a bad play. I'm not denying that. What I'm saying is,
the intent was good. It was not a mental mistake.
The problem was that he didn't anticipate Bud Dupree being that close.
Right.
And that's a mistake on his front. He has to throw that away earlier, right? I'm not making an excuse for Daniel Jones. And so many people just responded, oh, you're making this excuse you want to make for Eli. And it's just like, oh my God, shut up. It's over. Like, this is why I hate watching. I'm almost at the point where I'm not going to tweet during games. Because it's just like, people just say this because, you know, they're emotional, right? They're emotionally invested too. They're fans.
For sure.
You know, they go through the same emotions I go through. But I don't tweet based off emotions. I take a deep breath and I look at the play and I'm like, he was trying to throw it away. And then I put it out. But people are just, oh my God, it's crazy. And that's what I hate about Twitter. And another thing that I hate about Twitter is that everybody, like, majority of people that are on Twitter that cover sports live to prove that they were right. Daniel Jones.
Of course.
I don't know how you watch Daniel Jones and you come away with the conclusion that he's been worse than Sam Darnold. You can't. No matter what you thought about him his first year or his college career, he hasn't. Like, he's done more impressive things on the football field than Sam Darnold. And
absolutely,
people are, and I said this last year too, people are judging Daniel Jones on a, or watching Daniel Jones and judging him on a different lens than the way they judge other quarterbacks based on how they evaluated them in college. And a lot of that is because they don't want to just come out and say, I was wrong about Daniel Jones. He's actually better than I thought. He still might not be great, mm-hmm. but you know what? I was a little bit wrong in that. And I just hate that about Twitter. And yesterday, Daniel Jones led a 19-play drive where there was a number of plays that just broke down and he had to make a play.
Dude, he was 3 for 3 on third down and converted a fourth down.
Do you remember that one fourth down where it seemed like a miscommunication and he had to throw it the opposite side? Like that's making a fucking play, man. Like that's what you want from your quarterback. And
not only that, do you know, all right, how many times do you think Dan Jones was under pressure on his dropbacks?
Honestly, at least 60 to 70% of the times. I think you can go back and see. At least
he was under pressure on 26 of his dropbacks, which was 6 more than any other quarterback in week one.
I mean, he was literally under duress almost every play. Like, one clean pocket he had, he threw an absolute dart to Darius Slayton. And here, let me explain something to you guys.
Shout out to Andrew Thomas on that, too. Yeah. That blocking on Bud Dupree was sublime.
I hated the Daniel Jones pick. I didn't sleep at night when we drafted Daniel Jones because I thought it was going to be a disaster. But I'm here to tell you, Daniel Jones has shown a lot to me in his first 13 games, 14 games, however many he's played. And I'm like, I get more confident with him. Yes, he made a horrible mistake on the interception, right? And the other play with T.J. Watt, T.J. Watt made a hell of a play. But guess what? I think the play call was so predictable that T.J. Watt knew what was coming, right? And yep. So
that was an unreal play by T.J. Watt.
I'm
always impressed when a defensive end can just pop up and intercept a ball.
Absolutely,
like that.
But I definitely think T.J. Watt knew what was coming, and he made a hell of a play. I'm not denying that. But like, I just hate that people still do this with Daniel Jones. Like it's never like, you know what, he's been better than I thought. I always have to find a way to discredit a guy. And this is not just with Daniel Jones. I feel like this is with a lot of other quarterbacks. And it's sort of why I sort of hate draft Twitter, because it's so toxic, man. Like everyone is just trying to always prove themselves into being this genius. And I hate it, man. Like Daniel Jones played a damn good game outside of one really bad mistake. And
I agree.
If you're going to sit here and judge his performance based off one play, then that's fine. But let's do that with every quarterback, right? Or every young quarterback,
sure.
Right? And it's just unfair because I see so many people continuously make excuses for Sam Darnold, continue making excuses for Baker Mayfield, right? But when it comes to Daniel Jones, it's like, no, I got to be right about my pre-draft evaluations. And I'm not sitting here telling you that Daniel Jones is a surefire franchise quarterback, but I want to be honest. Looking at Baker Mayfield, looking at Josh Rosen, looking at Sam Darnold, looking at even Josh Allen, I mean, I think Daniel Jones has shown enough that shows that he's a better quarterback right now than Darnold and obviously Josh Rosen, but even Baker Mayfield. Now, Josh Allen's a different story because, you know, there's a large crowd of people that like to judge quarterbacks slowly off wins and not actually look at, you know, the numbers and actually look at how they play. But again, I'm not going to get into that. But it's just very frustrating. Like, I see Daniel Jones make a great play and he makes a bad decision. It's like everyone jumps on him. And it's just like, I hate Twitter for that. I hate draft Twitter for that. Everyone just lives to prove that they were right and everyone else was wrong. And I hate that. And it's just so stupid. And that's my rant about draft Twitter.
There you go. Overall, though, Dan Jones played well. Real quick, let's touch on some of the other good takeaways from the offense before we get into the defensive side of the ball. Andrew Thomas.
Yes.
Looks legit. Yes. Very, very happy.
Yes. And Darius Slayton is the team's number one receiver. They have to find ways to get him the ball.
I tweeted this. And listen, there's no way to know at the time, especially with him being a six-round pick, but he makes that Golden Tate contract look worse and worse with every passing game. So,
and
TikTok, because Golden Tate is not going to be on the Giants roster much longer. I've always been of the opinion that it wasn't a great signing. And if they can part ways with him after this season, I would be ecstatic to get that money off the books.
Yeah, and then also I'm going to give some credit to Dave Gettleman. I think yesterday I was thinking about this, and I wanted to ask you off air, but I'll ask you on air. In terms of value, right,
mm-hmm.
is Darius Slayton Dave Gettleman's best pick?
Got to be, hands down. Got to be.
If you can get a
– I mean, I tweeted praise for the pick yesterday, but – to find talent that late in the draft for a guy to – and we're not even just talking about, like, any receiver, right? I mean, there are receivers every year, and we see it often, that there are receivers drafted in the first round, drafted in the second round, that fail to catch on, that can't pick up an offense, that flame out and are on their second or third team, on their third, fourth, fifth years in the NFL. This guy is a bona fide star.
I mean, let me give you this stat.
I was waiting before you give me the stat. I was skeptical because I wanted to see Slayton do it again. I wanted to make sure it wasn't a fluke. I don't even need the full season after last night. Wide receiver one.
He's definitely their best wide receiver, I think. He is their wide receiver one. But I just want to point this out to you about Darius Slayton. From mm-hmm. Field Yates. Another great name, by the way. Darius Slayton has 10 receiving touchdowns since week 5 of last season, which is more than anyone else in the NFL.
More than anyone in the
this
league.
This was yep. the 171st pick in the 2019 draft. He was really productive in his rookie season, and he had a really good debut. And I'm not sitting here telling you that Darius Slayton is going to be a top 10 receiver, top 5 receiver in this league. I'm not telling you that. But on the rate he's going right now, it is clear that Darius Slayton is going to be a very good receiver in the NFL. And
different draft stock, but for whatever reason, I can't get like a Juju Smith-Schuster comparison out of my head.
I get sort of a Stephon Diggs comparison. Both drafted late. Both had
sure play style. Yeah, I'm going more play style. Yeah, but sure.
But in terms of like the last receiver, I think was Slayton. I think in terms of value and production. Now Darius Slayton still has a lot of work to do in terms of his game. He dropped some passes last year, but his route running is crisp. He can take a top off the defense, and he has built great chemistry with Daniel Jones. And
yes,
timing is everything between a receiver and a quarterback, and those two guys are on the same page. And I'm just saying, the rate he's going right now, he is going to be a very respectable, very good wide receiver one in the NFL. Like, this is
absolutely.
He'll be a guy that I'm not saying defenses are going to have to, you know, he's not going to keep a defense up at night, defensive coordinator up at night, but he's going to be a guy that the teams are going to have to sort of highlight and practice for because he's a mm-hmm. playmaker. And
yes.
I'm excited to see him the rest of the season. I do like him a lot. Round 5, 171. That's great value. And you know who was picked?
Great
you know
value.
Who was picked 5 picks after him?
Who?
Caden Smith. Pick 176. San Francisco.
There you go. Another guy I'm absolutely in love with. All right. Any other notes from the offense before we move to the defensive side of the ball?
No, I'm ready to jump to the defense, and I have a question for you about that 2019 draft.
Okay.
Again, I'm just looking at it. So 171 was Darius Slayton, and this is sort of where I want to start on the defense. So 171 was Darius Slayton. 176 was Caden Smith. Guess who 180 was?
You're going to have to tell
me. Corey Ballantyne.
Oh,
and this
yeah.
is where I want to start with people, on Corey Ballantyne. Because
could not have opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Corey Ballantyne is a 6th round pick in his second year. And you already knew, like we already knew this. Corey Ballantyne, that second cornerback spot is a weak spot for the Giants, opposite of James Bradbury. And it was going to take a lot of scheme and a lot of coaching for it not to be a complete dumpster fire. Now, Corey Ballantyne wasn't as bad as I thought last week, but after looking at a lot of the film and reading some things, it seemed as though the Giants did a good job of offering him help. And in the second half, sort of, obviously Ben Roethlisberger, experienced quarterback, made his adjustments and was able to take advantage of him. But I just feel like people's expectation of Ballantyne need to be taken down a level. This is going to be a weak spot for the Giants, and I don't know if Ballantyne is going to be the starter come week 4, 5, or 6, but he is going to struggle, and people are just going to have to accept that that's going to be a weak spot, and not get too carried away with expectations for Ballantyne.
Yep. Yeah. The entire secondary, really. I mean, this was my main takeaway after the games. You can scheme as much as you want, but at the end of the day, your weak guys are going to get exposed because the other side is going to have a couple plays where, you know, they just figure it out. And someone brought this up on the broadcast, but Ben Roethlisberger has seen everything 100 times over. And quarterbacks of his experience are going to be able to pick you apart eventually. Right. You know, I thought they did a pretty good job of scheming a pass rush early on in the first quarter. Guys like Golden, Williams, they were getting to the quarterback. Lorenzo Carter had a really good start. The snap distribution among them was pretty evened out. So that was nice to see, because I know in the past we had complained at length about how the Giants defensive coordinators were running their primary pass rushers into the ground and not getting a good rotation out there. So overall, I thought the defensive line played pretty decent for the lack of star power on there. You texted me that that's the USC Leonard Williams, the one that you fell in love with when they traded for him the first time around. But yeah, honestly, like the biggest takeaway from the defense is they don't have that alpha pass rusher. They haven't for years. It's going to be a top priority next draft and next offseason. You know, you just look on the other side of the field and you've got Bud Dupree and TJ Watt, right? The Giants don't have anybody of that caliber. No. They were very good at stopping the run last year. I don't expect that to change much, but you know, you spend a first round pick on DeAndre Baker, who decided to commit a felony, no longer on the roster. Sam Beal, constantly injured. I guess, what is that? A third round pick, never panned out, always injured.
And can we talk about DeAndre Baker for a second?
Sure.
And this was something that we were going to talk about. We didn't get to do a sort of preseason podcast before the year started. But here's the thing, and this was a big topic of discussion amongst Giants fans on Twitter, is when the Giants cut DeAndre Baker, right, how much blame does Dave Gettleman get? And here's the answer to that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. Nobody blames Dave Gettleman for DeAndre Baker breaking the law and facing serious jail time. The problem is, Ethan, is that when you draft a player, you draft them with the understanding that, you know, because you do extensive background work on a player and you look at his background. DeAndre Baker's...
To the extent with, by the way, if you go a few years back to when Eli Apple was the Giants pick, draft research so in-depth and sometimes absurd that we knew that... an alleged concern was that Eli Apple didn't know how to cook. Right. So, you're doing some pretty in-depth research on guys you're spending high draft capital on.
And so when you draft a player, in this case when you trade up to draft a player, you have done your homework on him. I'm not saying the Giants should have known that DeAndre Baker was going to break the law and do something like he did, but there were character concerns there. So with those character concerns, you're already knowing that I'm going to take a risk here. It's either going to be a reward or I'm going to, you know, have to face the consequences. DeAndre Baker during his rookie year was a really bad cornerback. We also heard that he wasn't a really good practice player and there were issues with the coaching staff. So
sleeping in meetings, if I recall correctly, or just not paying attention.
Those were the same situations we heard from Georgia. Extremely talented player, but these concerns are there. They translated over. When a draft pick like that doesn't work out, whether it's fair or not, the GM is going to face blame. The Giants traded up for DeAndre Baker. It's a bad investment. So it is a hit on Dave Gettleman for that, right? Like that you're in a weird agreement with that, right? Yeah, that's to talk about the secondary. Then the Giants have invested a lot in their secondary since Dave Gettleman took over. They have used a third round pick on Sam Beal. Obviously, they traded up for DeAndre Baker. They've paid a lot of money to James Bradbury, who I thought had a good game.
Yep.
So they've invested a lot in their secondary. Obviously, Jabril Peppers was a part of that Odell Beckham trade. They touted him as a first-round pick. Thought he was all right yesterday.
He
had his up.
I disagree, yeah, on special teams he was.
Yeah,
great.
He had his moments. He wasn't good. He wasn't bad. I thought he is who he is. I'll say that. They've invested a lot there, and obviously the guy they took, Xavier McKinney, who's obviously injured. My point is they've invested a lot in their secondary, and it seems like 3 years into it, you know, they're going to have to invest more because it's still a huge problem for the Giants. So it's going to take more draft capital. It's going to take more money to fix that secondary. And a team that's rebuilding, we talk about, you know, this is a rebuilding team. If you are not able, or if your picks do not pan out, it sets you back. And what we're seeing is because of those investments in Sam Beal and DeAndre Baker have not panned out, that's high draft capital. It sets you back, and you sort of have to work your way back into it. And that's a problem for the rebuilding thing. We talk about this is a rebuilding year. Yes, it is. But if your picks are not working out, it's just a lost year in terms of developing your secondary. And the Giants are going to have to essentially hit the reset button again on their secondary, specifically their corner spot, because the previous investment has not worked out.
Yep. Yeah, agreed.
And as far as the defense goes, the rest of the defense, Leonard Williams, man, if he plays like that, if he plays the way he plays yesterday, consistently for 16 games, he's definitely worthy of a contract. He was really good yesterday. It was truly USC Leonard Williams. And I hope we see more of that throughout the year. But another guy I got to give a huge shout out to is Lorenzo Carter. Really, yes. Really good game. And this is where you give credit to Dave Gettleman. Third round pick. Again, we talk about it. He's got to develop. So it took about 2 years, and we're starting to see him play a lot better. Now, hopefully it continues. It's just one game. We got to see him more consistently. I don't think Lorenzo Carter is ever going to be like a Von Miller pass rusher. But I think, we're asking him to be a good player. And I think he's starting to become that good player. Not going to be like a 15-sack-a-year guy, a defensive player of the year candidate. I don't think that. But just being a good player that the Giants can rely on. And I think he showed that in week one. Hopefully that continues on. But I was really impressed with the defensive line. I hope that they can continue to sort of get better as the season goes on. But I don't want to hear talks or people complaining about Patrick Graham, because they don't have a lot of talent defensively, and those guys are playing hard for Patrick Graham, and we're starting to see some really good player development. So that's important.
Agreed. I don't have too many other takeaways on the defense, really.
Yeah, the defense is what it is. It's going to be a work in progress. The Xavier McKinney injury really hurt them. It really, really hurt them.
Badly,
Hurt them really bad. I mean, a young player, like we talk about, right? It's a rebuilding year, but part of that rebuilding process is your young players developing. And when a player gets hurt, you know, it just slows down that development. And I don't know, they say he'll be back November. I don't know where the Giants will be in November. Hopefully that I don't know if they'll be in contention, but maybe we'll see some of Xavier McKinney this year. But other than that, this year is pretty much a wash for him.
Yes. All right, moving on. You wanted to do game-by-game predictions?
Yes. We didn't get to do this in week one. And
yes.
I myself had the Giants losing week one. It's just a tough task. New coaching staff, no real off-season, going against an experienced coach. I mean, Mike Tomlin has been in Pittsburgh since when? 2007?
Forever. Yeah.
Ben has been there since 2004. Pretty much same offense, same players. You know, they didn't have a lot of roster turnover. I mean, this was just a really tough game. And I thought the Giants had a chance to win, but I didn't think that they were going to win. I think I had the score like 24-10. I don't know what you had it, but we'll go week to week. So week two at the Bears. What do you
Oh man, that's tough. Loss.
So you're gonna have them losing to the Chicago Bears. I think they'll go to Chicago, yep. And I actually think they're gonna win this game. I think Joe Judge. This is a game where I think they'll.
It's really gonna come down to Trubisky.
Yes, and I don't trust Trubisky. And I think Detroit is very bad. Detroit.
See, I disagree with that. Actually,
I think Detroit's going to be in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. They are that bad.
Oh, I disagree. Oh man, I disagree. I think their offense is good enough that they'll pull out some
games.
I
don't know. I think I'm not a believer in Matt Patricia. I think he could be the first coach fired. Really.
Did you know that? I didn't realize this until I started doing my fantasy research. Stafford was on pace for 5,000 yards and 34 touchdowns last year.
Wow. But he got hurt. Didn't he get hurt?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not a believer, man. I think the Lions are just, they're one of those teams that are going to be a new coach, new secondary, new coach, new quarterback. So you got the Bears at 0-2. Excuse me, the Giants at 0-2. I think they're going to win 1-1. 49ers, we're both agreeing, so that's a loss, right? So they're at, you got the 49ers losing, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I got them losing too. So you're at 0-3. I'm at 1-2 at the Rams. Tough game. I think the Rams are going to be better than what a lot of people think. So yep. I have them losing.
I think they proved that.
I got them at 1-3. You got them at 0-4.
0-4.
At the Cowboys, I'm sorry, Dallas, really good.
L.
So I got them at 1-4. You got them at 0-5. Yikes.
Yep.
Washington comes to town coming off an 8-sack game. Chase Young, man. Wow. I think they're going to win this one. So they'll be 2-4. Are you telling me the Giants are going to be 0-6?
It's definitely a possibility. I'll give them the win there, though.
1-5. At the Eagles, that is going to be a Thursday night game, short week. I think the Giants, I'm going to say this is a loss here.
I agree.
Yeah, so they're going to be 2-5, I think I have them.
And I'm 1-6.
1-6. Bucks. On a, I think, is that a?
No, actually, wait. So L to the Steelers, 0-1. L to the Bears, 0-2. Niners, 0-3. Rams, 0-4. Cowboys, 0-5. Redskins, 1-5.
Eagles,
1-6.
I have them at 2-5 then, because I have them beating the Bears, yep, and beating the Redskins. So 2-5 versus 1-6. Bucks. I don't think the Bucks are going to be as good as people say. I'm one of those guys that
good enough to beat the Giants.
Yes, they are good enough to beat the Giants.
Yeah.
So you're saying 1-7 now, and I'm saying,
yes,
2-6 at Washington. This is a loss for me. They'll split with Washington.
Me as well.
2-7.
Yep.
So you got them at 1-8. I think they beat the Eagles, yep, at home.
I agree. I think they split both Eagles and Redskins games.
So I believe I got them at what, 3-6 at that point. 2-4-6.
3-7.
10-3-7, and you got them at 2-8. At the Bengals, I think this is a win too for the Giants.
Me as well.
So, and then at the Seahawks, that's a loss. You have probably have a loss, yep, too. So, what's their record now in terms of the last four games of the season? So, I have 1-2-3. I got them at 3-1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
No, you have them at 4, I think.
4. So I got them being the Bears, and I got them being the Redskins at home, and the
Eagles and Bengals. That's 4 wins.
4-2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
So I have
12.
3.
So I got them at 4-8, and you got them at 3-9.
3-9.
Cardinals come
3-10.
3-10.
L to the C. Oh, that was the Seahawks. So 3-9.
So 3-9. I got them at 4-8 against the Cardinals. I got them losing that game.
Me as well, 3-10.
3-10, I got them at 4-9. Browns come to town. I think they're going to beat the Browns.
Me as well.
So that is, I got them at 5-9. You got them at 4-10.
4-10.
Ravens.
And then I have back-to-back L's to close it out. Ravens, Cowboys.
Ravens, Cowboys. So you got them finishing 4-12. I'm going to give them, I think they'll get the Cowboys at home. Go 3.
I think the only way they get the Cowboys is if the Cowboys have everything locked up and they rest everyone.
It'll be something like that.
Yep.
So I think I got them finishing 6-10, and you got them finishing 5-11, or 4-12.
4-12.
4-12. I got them 6-10. Is this Dave Gettleman's last year?
Yes.
I think so, too. I think retirement is coming for Dave.
Me, too. Adios, Dave.
All right.
Cool. All right. How much? We've been recording for 53 minutes or so.
Yes.
Let's do real quick hits. Players to break out and players that will not meet or exceed expectations. I'll start. Players to break out. Darius Slayton, very obvious answer. And I'm going to go with my man. I think I delusionally said years ago that he would be the defensive rookie of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Lorenzo Carter.
I'm going to say that it is Daniel Jones breaks out. I think he's going to have a good year. I'm not going to get – I had this before the season, so I'm not going to get fooled by the Steelers. And on the defensive side of the ball, I was Lorenzo Carter – but I'm going to change my pick to Leonard Williams. I think Leonard Williams is going to have he's going to have at least 7 sacks this season, and which is going to be a career high. And I think he's going to be in line for a big payday. I'm not going to say whether the Giants give it to him, but I got Leonard. Leonard Williams is going to be a breakout. Delusional. USC version of Leonard Williams. You guys are going to see.
Delusional, but fine.
And I got to congratulate you on something, man, because we haven't talked in a while, but the Islanders are in the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Mets just got sold to
Steve Cohen,
yes.
Yep.
Finally going to be...
It's been a banner sports month for your boy.
Yes, Steve Cohen. So he,
Free at last.
Steve Cohen buying the Mets. I read that he's going to be the richest owner in baseball.
Yeah, dude, he's got – I mean, like, to say that he has fuck you money is an insult to people that have fuck you money. Like, he has – he's worth, like, $13 billion.
Yeah, he
– like, the guy is going to spend literally whatever it takes, and that's a nice change of pace.
He's got money and coming to New York. I heard he's also, like, a guy that – he's a very competitive guy. He doesn't – he's going to be spending – he knows the Yankees – I'm not saying they're ever going to overtake the Yankees, but he's going to spend money. He's going to try to bang.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised. I actually thought for a second it was going to be J-Lo and A-Rod. But
no, fuck them.
But you don't want – you got that billionaire.
I love A-Rod. Yeah. I love A-Rod, but I'm sorry. Give me the guy with
– that's worth
enough money to buy the team for fun. Yeah. Yeah. Did we do players that will not exceed expectations or that you think are going to have letdown years?
So the guy that I think is going to have a letdown year is in the secondary is actually going to be Jabril Peppers. Expectation for him is really high. I don't think that he is going to – I think he's going to be – at the end of the year, you're going to have a lot of fans not on the Jabril Peppers bandwagon.
The pride of Paramus Catholic. I would agree with that. I would pick him as my defensive player. On offense, yikes. I mean, Engram is the obvious answer, but put Zeitler.
Yeah, that was going to be – my guy was going to be Kevin Zeitler. He's making $12 million this year. He's not going to live up to that.
Yeah, that's the problem.
He's not going to live up to that. That's an easy one. But don't give up on Engram, man. If he can stay healthy, he's a mismatch for people. Don't let the one game
fall. Just got to see if Jason Garrett can figure it out.
Jason Garrett, he's got to catch the ball. Who's going to win the NFL MVP? I got Russell Wilson. Had him before the season. That's the MVP of the league.
Oh, wow. MVP, huh? Let's see. I just don't know how it can't be Mahomes or Jackson.
Well, you're going to see how Russell Wilson does it.
I love Russ. There was a 3-day time period, I think a year or two ago, where there were rumors he wanted out. And I was on that bandwagon for 2 days.
Future Giant Russell Wilson, huh?
Yeah, Future Giant.
Sierra Russell wanted Wilson. Him to come to New York.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Whatever. All right. Anything else before we wrap up?
That's it. Super Bowl. Give me your quick Super Bowl prediction. I'm going to go Seattle and not Kansas City. I'm going to say Baltimore. Seattle and Baltimore.
I got to go Kansas City.
I'm not going to blame you for that. Who are they going to play?
Oh, man. Kansas City. I mean, I love your Seahawks pick.
I'm on the Seahawks bandwagon this year.
Yeah. Seahawks, Kansas City.
Unleash Russell Wilson. That was the hashtag over the weekend. Everyone's saying it.
That's going to be it. Stop running so fucking much.
Yes.
Let him ball. All right. That's it. Week one in the books. It felt good to be back. It felt good to do this
again. It is a sense of normalcy, I think.
Yes. Yes. Listening to us rant about the Giants will hopefully bring you guys back to simpler times. All right. We'll wrap up. Remember to subscribe, iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, 5 stars, leave us a kind review, and follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN, Weiss is at NYG Daily, the blog's at GothamSN, and we'll speak to you guys next week.
Peace. All right.